From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 359, Protecting PCs with EMET, with guest Kurt Falde, recorded Wednesday, February 18th, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Kurt Falde, and he's a 10-year employee at Microsoft, although I suspect next year he'll be 11-year. And he's started off as a rapid response engineer, which is came before premier field engineers, and I'm sure we'll have to talk about that. And he supports Active Directory and many of the other platforms. These days, he's with the CSS Security Group and supports customers with security incidences, as well as a number of security-related products like the update server and EMET and so forth. We're going to talk about that today. And for the past 5 years, he's been working in Premier Field Engineering, supporting the whole stack of Active Directory, Federated Services, Group Policy, Security, DNS, and all that good stuff. Welcome, sir.
Welcome. Thanks.
And glad to have you. You're in the UK at the moment. I appreciate you taking some time to chat with us. So I've not heard about the rapid response engineers, which I guess the precursor to the PFEs. We have lots of PFEs on the show, but maybe not old enough timers.
Yeah, I started out with them and then I switched to the phone queues for a while. So yeah, I think there were about 50 to 100 of us that were rapid response engineers when I initially joined. At the time, our work was a lot more reactive, right? And hence the title. So right. I believe back then, if you're doing more than like 10 or 20% proactive work, it was frowned upon, let's say.
And definitely PFEs have this air of let us come in and make sure you're doing the right things before you get into trouble.
Yes, they realized that about 2 to 3 years in that, hey, if we went and did these proactive things more often, then we would have to get up less at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Nice. So, well, yeah. And the side effect of that has been this tool suite that a lot of people just don't know about, of free tools that I guess you guys build to do your jobs and just make available to everyone else.
Yes.
And
it's a lot of tools.
For sure. Yeah. And one would argue almost too many. It's quite the alphabet soup to sort through all of these things.
Yep. Emmett is definitely one of those. I'll say that.
But some of them have grown up. Like I'm really impressed. Someday I'll put together the story of like the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, because then now it's part of ConfigMan and so forth. Like it's a real boy from something that started off as I think a real PFE kind of initiative.
I don't know about that. I'm not much of a desktop deployment guy.
Yeah, it's not your problem.
Yes.
And I love that you're in the security space because, I mean, can we get through a week without a major breach these days? It seems crazy.
Yes, we had some really big ones too recently, yes.
And I really appreciate this idea that these things are cumulative, that the more breaches we have when passwords getting out in the wild, the easier it gets for the black hats to go after us. Because clearly we're not actually going to fix our passwords. 123456 is the best password you could hope for.
Yeah, I try to teach password phrases or that length is better than complexity to most of my customers, but most of them are bound by various compliance regulations that they have to go with.
That are daft.
That regulation says, yes.
And I keep that XKCD security comic in my pocket at all times.
Yep, show that to all my customers, and they're like, well, I'm required by DISA-STIG to have, 14 and 2 out of everything, or...
Yeah.
PCI or HIPAA or whatever says that I must do this.
Yeah. Honestly.
Yes.
All right. But let's talk about EMET. Apparently, you've been working on it all day, and I'm catching you at the end of your day. I hope you have a beer in hand.
Yeah. I'm not a drinker, but I'm a little fed up with that, but at the moment, not really. But so I've been delivering training, shall we say, internally to a bunch of other PFEs. I had about 8 PFEs in the classroom and another 3.
That's cool that you guys, once in a while, you get to go together and upgrade skills. So what is EMET? What's the acronym?
So it stands for Enhanced Mitigation Experience Toolkit, which is, I don't know where they came up with the name. I'm not a product group guy. I'm just an engineer.
But. Yeah, okay. Wow, that's very classic Microsoft product name.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know. At least the word mitigation is in there, so that says something around security. The rest of it, not real sure where that fits in security-wise, but the mitigation piece is right.
Okay. Oh, man, that is such a bad name. I'm in awe. I mean, I've dealt with some bad names of products over the years for Microsoft, but that's a whopper.
Well, I like the Emmett name. It's nice and short. It's I watched the Lego movie this past weekend, and the main guy is named Emmett, and that's all I could think of.
So this implies to me that this is something you run after you've had an assault?
So the way it installs, you kind of think of it like an antivirus client,
okay,
but it doesn't really function in the same way as an antivirus client.
And when you talk about an antivirus client, you talk about something that literally every file coming and going from this machine I'm going to inspect.
No, we don't have any file filter drivers. There's no filter okay. driver type.
Because that's what I think of as a virus client, but you right. know, EMET or EMET is not yeah, that.
So there's three base pieces, shall I say, to EMET. So one of them is we provide the ability to configure some system-wide security settings on the OS. So one of those is DEP or data execution prevention. The other one is ASLR. And the other one is CHOP or structured exception handling overwrite protocol. So there's system-wide security settings that applications can take advantage of, or you can force applications to utilize. So one piece of EMET is basically some knobs, shall we say, where you can turn those on and off.
Okay, and these reach out through GPO and Active Directory and so forth to actually implement them?
No, this is local on your operating
okay.
system. So when you install this client locally on your operating system, you get these knobs to configure these system-wide security settings.
Okay.
The other piece of EMET, and there's three main pieces, that's one piece. The other two pieces... the next one, which is not what I consider the most important one, is one called certificate pinning. So think SSL certificates, right, in your web browser, and this works specifically with Internet Explorer. So it's a protection mechanism whereby you can say for a high value site, something that's really important to me. So think like your bank website or right. your Google or your Outlook.com or your Twitter or Facebook or whatever, something where I want to make sure that I actually am on Facebook.com when I go to the login for Facebook.com allows me to provide an extra pin that basically says if I go to www.facebook.com that the certificate for Facebook.com has been issued from a specific root CA and the thumbprint that's associated with that specific root CA.
So we're not talking about a specific cert per se, but it's you go and get the information from the Facebook cert and say, I would presume that all Facebook certs are going to have this thumbprint.
Well, we don't look at the specific Facebook cert, but we say that it has been issued from, say, VeriSign with
right.
the thumbprint of X for the VeriSign root certificate instead of being issued from, you know, Joe Blow's CA.
Yeah. Well, now we get back to the whole cert issue and they, you know,
yeah.
the supposed, you know, democratization of the internet for the central repositories for certs have just made certs a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you look at the Windows Trusted Root Store nowadays, it's a lot of root CAs. So.
Well, and also a whole bunch of rescindeds too. Like it's,
yeah. Yeah.
If you've kept it up to date, which is a whole other can of worms.
Yes. That's why you're starting to see in like some federal organizations that they're basically applying mandates that say you have to go in and prune the trusted root store in your organization and
right.
only these specific root CAs are allowed. So, yeah.
But I like this idea of being able to be, I mean, there's sites and then there's sites. Clearly for sites that have security significance to you, the idea that you would only use a sort of core set of certificate routes makes a lot of sense to me.
Yep. Yeah, we have built in about 7 different what we call PIN rules or rules for specific sites.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are our sites, as you would expect. I think Twitter's in there. I think Facebook's in there. And I believe some Yahoo sites are in there as well as what we sort of consider high value sites.
Right.
I've seen some customers do banking websites. Some have like critical internal websites that use SSL, and they'll go in and add those as well. But yeah, the idea is you do it for high value sites.
Yeah. And ones that you, yeah, the consequences of failure or spoofing are significant.
Yes, absolutely.
And what was the third part of Emmet?
So the third part is kind of what I consider the core functionality of Emmet, and that's the Emmet mitigations themselves. So the way that those work is we have two different profiles or list of applications that we protect. So we have what's called a recommended profile, which is a smaller subset of applications, and then we have a popular profile, which is a larger set of applications.
Okay.
These applications, think of your normal user mode applications. So think Internet Explorer, Chrome, Outlook, all the Office suite. I believe the Open Office suite is in there.
Yeah.
It depends on which profile that you're using, but commonly used user mode applications.
Right. An app's known to be safe.
Yeah, more commonly apps known to be exploited by malware.
let's
put it that way.
Oh man, he showed the difference between the security guy and the mortal, right? Is that mindset of
yes. So Java is a biggie that's in there.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Flash is in there, Adobe Reader's in there, Shockwave's in there. Depends on which profile you're using,
right.
But yeah, all of those apps that you typically see vulnerabilities for, whether it's our software or third-party software, is, you know, most of those pieces of software that you see vulns come out for are on the list of protected software.
And so what does it mean to be protected?
So the way that it works from an architecture standpoint is you install Emmet, you pick which profile that you want. And what we do is we use something called the Application Compatibility Framework to inject Emmet.dll or Emmet64.dll into the process for that application. So the Application Compatibility Framework is, think you've ever had this old program, you're trying to run it on Windows 7 or 8, and it doesn't run properly, and it pops up that thing that says, do you want to try to run this like you're on, you know, XPSP2 or something
right.
of that nature? So we have this framework that's part of the OS that's doing this. I'm not a big application compatibility guy. There's probably guys that'll correct me on all this. But anyway, what happens is for the applications that we're protecting, we put them in the database for the application compatibility framework. And then every time those apps start, they start normally, but they also inject Emmet.dll into their running process.
Hmm.
And then Emmet.dll has a list of like 15 different mitigation techniques that we use. And we look for these common exploit techniques that malware tends to use. And whenever we see them, we terminate the application, basically, if we see that type of mitigation or that type of exploit technique being utilized within that application.
All right. So now I see where you come at the sort of there's something like virus protection like about this. I just like that it's
yeah.
got that real-time element. It's looking at what's actually executing, not just the fingerprints of a virus.
Right. It's the fingerprint of the initial technique, right? So they typically use, and I'm not a big security researcher / dev guy. I'm more of an infrastructure guy, so I
sure.
can't get into all of these. So, yeah, for example, one's called export address table filtering, whereby we filter calls to what's called the export address table of some core Windows binaries, where various malware techniques, the initial technique is basically to try to find this export address table for like in TOS kernel files and then call something from them. So part of this is built in to filter those calls from something that shouldn't be calling there normally. So Internet Explorer doesn't normally make a call to certain places. And if it sees that, it says, hey, this is a problem. It stops Internet Explorer or Chrome or whatever it happens to be. And then there's a whole list of various mitigation techniques. There's various anti-ROP or return-oriented programming techniques. There's one that looks for trying to load a library from a network location. So, for example, if Internet Explorer tried to suddenly load, you know, a DLL from whack somewhere on the internet, bad DLL, that would be a problem, right?
Sure.
So it'd look at that as something bad and stop Internet Explorer at that point and trigger something along the natures of, hey, I stopped Internet Explorer and then logged.
Yeah, that's my next question was, so what does the user see when this thing fires off?
Right. So from the user perspective, you see two things. You see that my application crashed, shall we say. So yeah. You get sort of like a crash box for my application. And depending on how your OS is configured, it'll say, do you want to close the application? Do you want to debug the application? From more of the what you think of like an antivirus sort of thing, you have a little system tray notifier that's running down the system tray, and it pops up a little message saying, Emmett has closed Internet Explorer with EAF mitigation because of EAF mitigation detected.
Right.
So you can customize that message via GPO. So you could, do something along the lines of call your help desk or right. whatever. You can also hide the system tray. So it, from an enterprise perspective, it sort of has some of that stuff you'd expect from an antivirus client. We do log all of those. So those get logged to the application event log with right. a source of Emmett, and they get their own Emmett event ID as well, the event ID 2 most of the time for detections. And then we have in the event, which application. So if it's like Internet Explorer, we throw in the username, we throw in the computer name, the time stamp, that stuff, is normally there from an event. Which mitigation type. They also throw some other things, like they'll throw the PID or the process ID, the TID or the thread ID.
Right.
Locations on the memory stack, more developer focused type items as well.
Not those things are going to matter at that point. You've already killed the process.
I've said the same thing myself.
Yeah. Let me tell you where it was running. It's not running there anymore, but.
Yeah, I guess if you had some serious auditing turned on for processes, it may be useful to know because you might have other information referencing the PID. But normally, knowing the PID after the fact is not very useful.
Yeah. But, and if you've got all that stuff turned on, you're probably running a honeypot or more relevantly, everything's going very slowly.
Yes.
This is the battle we're actually up against, is there's so many different things running on a machine at any given time anyway. We can't possibly hope for the user to manage all of this. So, it's nice to have a tool watching. It's just a question of, once an event has occurred, what do you tell the user? And what are the remedies at that point?
If it was, let's say, a good event, an actual mitigation occurred of malware, right?
Right.
Or, an exploit, there really isn't too much to do. So if it's Internet Explorer crashing, I could go and do some stuff from a forensic standpoint and, dump their IE history, dump my browser, my proxy firewall logs, et cetera, and take a look at that and see where they were at the time. And if I wanted to try to use a test lab machine that wasn't connected to my network, hopefully, and actually test that website and see if it still crashes as well in Emmett and sort of verify that that's bad.
Make it reproducible, right? In the end, what we're worried about here is that this is actually key logging malware or something that's actually going to steal from the user or have long-term impact.
Right. And if it crashed in that case, typically what's happened is I've crashed before I've gotten malware because
right.
I crashed on the initial injection point, right? So the initial exploit technique,
right,
whereby it was trying to download malware after the fact to my box.
So the mitigation is don't do that again.
Yes. Mitigation is you were at the wrong site.
Yeah.
Don't go there again.
That wasn't a picture of Anna Kournikova. Come on.
That's right. Maybe I should report that site to the, unsafe sites within IE or Chrome or whatever and, get that out there so it pops up in people's browsers
right.
and don't go there type of thing.
What's more interesting is if it's coming from an internal app. And now you're
so that's the one where we typically get the support calls from an enterprise perspective, right? It's crashing. I'm, going to an internal website and I'm getting this and it's crashing on, say, Java commonly or whatever. And basically what that comes down to is that there's two things that I can possibly do here. So one of them is maybe I have the developers internally for that internal app and they can take a look at it, in conjunction with the user mode dump that I can generate from Emmett, and they can possibly debug it and fix it so it's not doing what looks to be an exploit technique.
Right. So they've actually come up with a coding technique that looks like an exploit.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Maybe they're doing a load library from a network share or something that doesn't look right. And they fix that to have the DLL locally instead of on a network share.
And there is a possibility that the build machine has gotten exploited and is now deploying exploits in every app that they push out. That's not likely, but I've seen it.
Yep.
You know, yep. Propagating viruses across the organization with SMS. Awesome.
Yep. Hey, I've got full control and reporting and everything.
And goodness knows we wouldn't run a tool like Emmet on the build machine so that we didn't get the exploit initially. Oh, no. Yep. That's for users. We wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But either way, I mean, I get that thought that internally, I guess the other question here is false positives. And technically, if they're using a programming technique for a legitimate purpose that gets picked up by this, it is a kind of false positive.
Right. So the other option, basically, one is to try to fix the program that's called, making what looks bad.
Right.
If I don't have that option, right? So if I've got some third-party plugin where I don't control the vendor, or maybe the vendor doesn't exist anymore, then I'm sort of stuck with, I have to go into Emmet, and for the specific application that I'm triggering on, I need to figure out which mitigation that's triggering. So if it's like export address table filtering, I can go into Java or Internet Explorer or whichever process that I'm protecting, and I can uncheck just that mitigation for that application. And that's typically the fix, I'll say, in a lot of cases where it's, some third-party vendor, whether it's us or someone else. And that's what you typically have to do as an enterprise. That's the immediate fix, is go in there and uncheck that.
Stop the noise.
Yep.
But at the same time, you now have an opportunity for InfoSec to have a conversation with the devs about, is this an appropriate technique? Could this cause problems in the future?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting point. So with Emmet, how am I expected to push this out to all of my workstations, essentially?
Yeah. So workstations, definitely. It is typically designed with user mode stuff in mind, right? So workstations would be your primary workload. Terminal servers /RDS type servers, yes, we do support it with Emmet 4.1. Servers, so the U.S. Department of Defense has mandated it for every Windows operating system.
Okay.
However, servers really isn't the intended use case, because hopefully you're not, running Outlook or Internet Explorer or Java. Or
there's a reason that stuff's locked down by default.
Yes. So if you're running all that stuff on your server in the first place, you're doing something wrong in the first place, right?
Yeah.
But if you are, then okay, go ahead, drop Emmet on there and protect them as well on the server.
Right.
So I'm not going to say not do it. But
is there an overhead to the presence of Emmet? Am I going to feel it on those machines?
Yeah. So I've gotten that question from a guy as well for a customer of his.
Nice.
What I think I've seen for the product group is that it's negligible.
Right.
So from a true perf impact, it would be really hard to measure. Basically, you have a running notifier process, right? So there's some CPU cycles there with that little system tray icon and whatever memory that utilizes. That's pretty small. And then for the actual Emmet mitigation techniques, both the certificate pinning and the mitigation techniques for all the various applications, that would be some CPU cycles as well as whatever memory is required for loading Emmet DLL into that process.
Right.
So if I'm loading Word and also loading Emmet DLL into the Word process, there's a little extra memory and there's a little extra CPU cycles for it to do what it needs to do mitigation wise.
Well, I appreciate this is a little more precise than your typical virus scanner, that every time there's a file handle picked up by anything, it's injecting itself into it and then, thumbprinting across a huge number of thumbprints across every file flowing in and out of the machine. That's what people get annoyed about. This seems a little bit more precise.
Yeah. When you get a file filter that has to look at every file that goes IO-wise through your system, that's a little more intensive.
and rather than actually looking for the coding pattern of all of this malware, you're looking for technique, which means you're probably better off on 0 day as well.
Yeah, so I don't know if you've seen this at all, but in a lot of our security bulletins and security advisories now, we're calling out when Emmet is a protection mechanism. I don't have the list for 2013. someone published it, but I don't have it. I know in 2012, out of 4 or 5 security advisories, that Emmet was a valid mitigation technique for 4 out of 5 0 days that
nice.
Were. So,
well, and also, you know, it's got to be one of the tools that's going to catch a lot of these 0 days first, because it is just looking for that behavior.
Yep, absolutely. So 4.0, we also introduced telemetry. So we report back, if you allow it, we report back to the Microsoft Error Reporting Stream and Watson or whatever you want to call it. So our product group is starting, you know, if you've allowed that, to get back more telemetry on crashes from Emmet now. So they can start to see more, shall we say, new malware or new things out there in many cases.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's a really interesting way to go about it. It's, you know, it sounds like an interesting set of stuff. So there's a certain amount of setup in advance, sort of getting the initial pass on the machine, deciding what you're going to do as far as certificates concerned, working up your list of protected software. But this sounds like something you do at the image level, and then make it part of your MDT or your ConfigMan push, so that all of the machines coming off these standard templates have that configured in, the same way you would with virus software.
That's pretty much what I tell customers. If you're considering deploying this, think of it as I'm deploying or changing antivirus agents.
Right. And I guess that's the other next question is, should I use this instead of Defender?
It feels the same. It's totally different than Defender, right? So Defender is antivirus. Defender is based on signature sets. It looks at some, if you have heuristics turned on, heuristics will look at various things. But heuristics, again, is mostly not the mitigation, the exploit technique itself. Heuristics is based on heuristics of the files themselves, and not the exploit technique.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's basically a kind of checksum to say, is this a normal version of this file, or does it have any of these weird things in it? They're coming at the problem totally different ways. In some ways, I appreciate the Emmet approach better, because it's not that you might have a virus on this thumb drive you just stuck into the machine. It's, is this virus attempting to act on you?
Right. So, for example, where antivirus would really come in is, say for example, I install Emmet on a system after it had gotten a virus for some reason.
Right.
Emmet at that point will probably not see that virus, because once it's installed and running as a program or as a service or whatever on the system, it doesn't need to run exploit code anymore at that point.
If it's even vaguely intelligent malware, it tries to look like everybody else once it's got itself in.
Absolutely. It's running as, you know, Windows service name or something weird that tries to look legit.
Yeah, this is the difference between the soldier on the wall watching how people go through the wall and the secret police running around inside of the city making sure everybody's got their papers.
Versus antivirus on your system, updated signatures are going to pick up that, you know, bad piece of software.
Yeah, the guy that's whatever's already in can be found and removed. But the antivirus approach is not good for 0 day.
Right.
So, no. I mean, I sort of appreciate that these two things together, you know, one augments the other pretty well.
Yeah, antivirus definitely plays a role. This plays a serious role in 0 days, shall I say.
Right. Well, and I do also appreciate, especially on the IE side, like, this can actually compensate for some dumbness on the part of some users.
Yes. So, we protect... On the pinning side, not so much the other mitigation side, we protect Internet Explorer by default. We have reg keys where you can enable it, I believe, for Chrome and for Opera. Basically anything that uses our certificate checking.
Right.
You can't do it Firefox. Firefox uses, it's kind of like, if you've ever used like OpenSSL, it uses its own bundle of certs basically for cert checking. So it cannot take advantage of that. We don't by default protect anything other than an Internet Explorer for certificate pinning, though.
Yeah, would you say that's just using WinINet under the hood, or is it actually just the cert store?
It's just the cert store, from what I understand. Okay. I'm not great on that piece of it.
Yeah, it's great. That's a specialized area unto itself. But I do like this idea that if you're an organization that's dealing with the realities of these messy certs and where InfoSec data could be leaking out, being able to say, okay, well, it's for these major sites that have a significant risk to us, we can pin those certs down pretty tightly.
Yep. Also, I don't know if I should mention this, Chrome also has its own method of certificate pinning built in. They have HSTS, I believe it is, or Hypertext Strict transfer something or another. Nice. But they sort of do the same thing. They don't allow configuration currently. It's just whatever Google has specifically placed in there from a pinning perspective in their cert pinning solution.
Well, you got to trust them. They don't do evil. Oh, right. Wait, did I say that out loud? That's a shame. All right.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have their best intentions in mind, but I do appreciate that Emmett's approach is, you know, you could take our best practices, but if you've got a particular way you want to do things, do it.
Yeah. So what else?
It's freely downloadable. This is just a download off the Microsoft site. We'll include a link in the show.
aka.ms/Emmett is the quick
That's the short one. Yeah. That's awesome.
Enterprise perspective. So we have GPOs. Just want to mention those. If you do use GPOs, unfortunately, they don't. It's kind of weird. They don't apply automatically. You have to run a command line, emmett_conf --refresh, to make them import.
Right.
Because Emmett does not have a service running a system that's able to detect when the GPOs have updated and then import them into the application compatibility database.
Okay.
That's something they're looking at. Maybe. I don't know if that will happen or not in the future.
Well, and the presumption would be you have an existing practice around your GPOs anyway, and this is essentially just a set of recommendations.
Right.
You know, I would hope that someone would not just apply your policies because I like you. You know, they would actually look at the policies, decide how is this going to affect things, and run it in a sandbox and make sure it doesn't, know, I have watched GPOs propagate across an organization mangling functionality. It reminds me of SMS, you know, disasters. It's the same sort of thing, that automated propagation, just like, no, come back.
I highly recommend doing a pilot with this. I mean, it's like an antivirus switch. You need to do a pilot with all of your user applications in your environment to make sure that. And many times it's like plugins, right? So you've got plugins in Outlook, you got plugins in IE, got plugins in Adobe, and a lot of times they'll cause that application to trigger.
Because they are using injection techniques to add themselves to your app.
Yep.
So sometimes those techniques are exploitable, and you need to know.
Yep. Another thing, we don't have an enterprise console or anything like that for this at the moment. Think of it kind of like, I don't know, like Microsoft Security Essentials, you know, that I'm deploying to the enterprise. We do have GPOs, but we don't have enterprise reporting, shall we say. I've seen a number of customers use Windows Event Forwarding.
Right.
Is built into the OS. So you can use Windows Event Forwarding. So basically set up some GPOs, set up a subscription server and say, forward all my client events with all my detections up to a centralized server.
Yeah.
And that way I can parse through those.
Sure. This could easily be an OpsMan config as well, right? Like it should be able to pump into the same things. In the end, if it shows up in the event log, it's capturable.
Right. However, OpsMan, you're usually thinking about monitoring servers and not tens of thousands of client machines.
Well, if you are going to monitor client machines, you have to do it very carefully.
Yeah. Yeah. Deploying OpsMan consoles to thousands of machines is, I don't know, sometimes your SCOM would kill you if you told him to do that.
He did what?
Yeah.
Well, and even just a crit filter is not enough. It's every desktop PC barfs a few crits a day, right? Like, it just would add up to a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. There's different considerations of the database and how much stuff it's storing for, you know, desktops versus servers, usually.
But this is a frontline InfoSec thought, so you do want it to be surfaced in the org pretty quickly.
Yes. Yeah, you'd rather, especially if it's doing a false positive on an internal business app, you really want to get in front of that and get that fixed so that you're not taking down business critical functions, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's one thing if I browse to the wrong website and the user kind of figures on their own that, hey, that's probably because I was browsing to the wrong website.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to wonder how many times you have an event like this that kills the app, fires it back. You know, if you're right on it, you see that message, you call back to that user, and he goes, "Yeah, don't worry, that won't happen again. I'm not going to talk about it."
Yeah, exactly.
Not going to talk about it.
Yep. He's badly clearing his history on his browser.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, a whole lot of history dumping going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe this is something for the wives in the audience, too. I don't know. an interesting path to go.
Yeah, I recommend it. I mean, I tell everybody I see, just install it and hit next, 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 really. I mean, you use the, if you're just doing it on a standalone machine,
yep.
The recommended profile does the, you know, the base normal things that you would use, like Outlook and Internet Explorer and Chrome, Adobe Reader, Java, except, you know, the most commonly used things. And for the most part, you're not going to see a problem from a performance impact or anything of that nature, especially with home machines. You don't got nearly as many plugins loaded, IE, et cetera.
Yeah, it depends on the machine. The older the machine, the uglier this is going to get.
Yep. Yeah.
But he does speak interestingly to the future. This technology existing, it's like, this sounds like something that ought to be in Windows long term.
So an interesting thing was, I don't remember the exact virus. I just saw this the other day. Apparently some new piece of malware, there was a write-up externally. It was first that we've seen of this, as far as I know, that it's in a new piece of malware technique or whatever, where part of the initial thing that it checks on is it checks on the existence of the file path for emmetdll on the OS.
Right.
And if it's determined that emmetdll exists, it stops and doesn't try to actually infect the machine.
That's hilarious. Wow. Talk about an endorsement.
Yes. It's like, we know our exploit technique won't work if we detect this on the OS, so we're not even going to try.
Wow. It's a, yeah, it's countermeasures.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, you yeah. Clearly Emmett has made it if the black hats are now flagging any efforts in Emmett being in on the machine.
Yep.
Just walk away. Walk away fast. Hey, Kurt, it's been really fun talking to you. I will certainly include the link to Emmett for the listeners here. And anywhere we can find you, or you got a blog site or anything like that?
I believe I'm on blogs.technet.com/b/kfaldy. I haven't posted in a while. I think my last one was on restricted admin mode, RDP in 2012 R2, but before that, it's been years since I posted. I used to post more when I was in the phone queues, but I'm trying to answer questions recently on the Emmett TechNet forums, but you may find me there sometimes.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate your insight.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.